Well, with me now is Elliot Kersen, who was for a while Ronald Reagan's media advisor. He developed TV ads in which he tried to emphasize Reagan's stand on issues. In Philadelphia, Kersen is known as one of the most unpredictable and offbeat minds in advertising. He's led media campaigns for area political candidates, including Pete Flaherty, Pete Kostmeyer, Arlen Specter, as well as having clients like restaurants, hairdressers, airlines, and so forth. Elliot Kersen, it's a great pleasure to have you here on Fresh Air.
It's good to be here.
Are you available to anyone, or does someone have to be the kind of client who you'd want to work with? And by that I mean the type of political person or someone having the kind of product that you like.
Yeah, I'm really picky and choosy. I only like to do basically one of a kind of something, and there has to be something worth there. You have to get excited about it. In order to do a good job, you have to really be into it. And if you don't believe in it, you really can't do a good job. You have to get excited about it, and that enthusiasm can show.
So someone's got to sell you before you can sell
them.
Yeah.
That turns a lot of people off. I don't want to be interviewed, but that's the way I work, and the end product is a little different.
How'd you get hooked up with Reagan?
Well, I knew the media director in New York, Ruth Jones, who bought all the radio and TV time for Reagan, and the campaign had expressed dissatisfaction with their commercials. They paid an exorbitant amount of money for commercials they felt were useless, and they were sort of pedestrian kind of commercials, and they were panicked because they were going into New Hampshire and they were behind in the polls, and they said, I got a guy in Philadelphia. He'll do it. So I told them the basic ideas. I said, you know, I think there's an opportunity to do something. I think this is the direction you ought to go in. Do this, and I think you'll do all right. And they tried it, and it worked.
What was the this?
Well, I always thought of Ronald Reagan as on the ranch, sawing wood, riding horses, sitting around an easy chair, looking into a teleprompter, or sort of memorizing speeches. And I said, what you want to do is don't put Reagan on for 30 seconds. Let's just have him on for about 10 or 15 seconds. And the commercial's two-part. The first part of the commercial, talk about a problem. Talk about something he's done, talk about something he feels, something he believes, something he'd like to do, and then have him respond to it. And not have him in a studio, not have him in a ranch or at home or on a street corner, but in a studio, plain. And the issue was age at the time, too. And I felt if you took Reagan and just put him right out front with nothing around him, let people look at him, let people see if he looked old or not. In other words, if he was too old, well, it would show. If he didn't look that old, if he looked good, if he had looked vital, well, that'll show too, so it's a chance to take.
So you wanted him outside of his ranch to break that stereotype that he's always on the ranch.
Right.
And if he looked old, is that something you'd want to cover up with a lot of makeup? Did you give consideration to the height of the collar and the pancake base of his makeup?
Well, I thought, always when you do something, you always have a makeup person around because they could look like they didn't have a good night's sleep. They could look like they need a shave. They could look a little pale. And you have somebody in there to spruce it up because, you know, that's advertising. You can try and do your best foot forward. So I had a makeup person out. We did it in Los Angeles. I had a Hollywood makeup man there. And I spoke to Reagan's secretary the day before. And she said, the governor never wears makeup. He's never worn makeup in any of his movies. And I said, yeah, sure. I walked out there. I went to the next day. Reagan walks in the studio. He looks at the makeup guy and says, I don't wear makeup. And I look at his skin. He really has beautiful skin. I don't know how he does it. It's really a beautiful. No wrinkles in it. And he said he's never worn makeup in any movie he's ever been in. And the makeup man said, well, sir, I might want to put a little makeup on your forehead just in case there's a glare. Well, okay, but not no makeup. And he was right. He doesn't use it.
So you didn't use any makeup?
Didn't use any makeup.
What do you think of Reagan politically when you started on the campaign?
My impression of Reagan was that he was a big, tough, strong guy, impersonal. And this is all the impressions I picked up from over the years. Extreme conservative. And I went in. I was shocked because he's a lovely guy. He's a lovely guy. If he was sitting here on the show, I'd say, you probably don't remember old radio, but let me tell you some funny things that I saw or I was involved with. And that's what we talk about. And if someone interrupted and say, excuse me, but what about the situation? How would you handle it? Oh, that's another thing. There's two sides to that. And what I would do is, and he would change horses, and he would get back. I found he likes to relate to people with what they do. Very interested in people.
So he's kind of charming and anecdotal and humorous.
Yeah, I was shocked. I didn't expect him to be like that.
Well, with
a great
sense
of humor. Uh-huh. And I was totally surprised. I never saw anything that
What do you think of him politically as presidential material?
Well, politically, it's a lot of things I agree with, and there's a lot of some things I don't agree with. I'm more liberal. Anybody's more liberal than a conservative, but I'm pro-ERA, pro-abortion, and he's not. And I feel I just take the good with the bad.
Uh-huh. Did you ever feel responsibility, like if he became president and if abortion became illegal through some of his efforts, or if the ERA was suppressed because of his efforts, how would you feel given that you'd worked on his campaign and you support the right to choose and you support the ERA?
I feel bad. But I know his record as governor, that he was more liberal than his rhetoric. I would hope the same thing would happen again.
What did you try to emphasize politically in the commercials that you did for him?
I don't think there was any strong political thing, unless you think some of the economic views are more political. I agree with what he says. I agree with one of the commercials that said, our taxes are higher. I'm trying to think exactly. So we're taxing work, savings, and investment like never before. As a result, we have less work, less savings, and less invested. And I agree with that theory. I hadn't come on after that saying, you know, I didn't agree with President Kennedy, but when he came out with a tax cut, everybody increased. If I'm elected president, we're going to try that again. I thought it would be a wild thing to have Ronald Reagan talk about President Kennedy. And he said, yeah, I like that. I like that. Cool. And so I moved them a little off the right. And I agree with that because somebody's making money. Everybody, like the listeners, the average listener, has an increase in salary over the past year or two. They have, and with that increase in salary, they're in a higher income bracket. So they have less money. And with inflation, they have less money than they've had before. And I would talk about this and people say, you know, I'm making more money and I have less money in my savings account now than when I made less money. I don't understand it. And that's the basic thing. I think it was one of the things that we spoke about. The underlying thing I think I stressed in the campaign was leadership. The country is, I felt that was what the country needs. I feel it's what is still needed. And I gave them that calm, cool look of a leader without gimmicking it up with putting them on a ranch or having them get off an airplane with balloons and fancy photography. I thought it would be straight and solid.
What kind of content did you use to emphasize the leadership qualities?
Well, I think just his basic approach of talking. You look like a leader, sound like a leader. One of the commercials we did call Leadership, where he said, our leaders tell us that our children won't be able to have the same standard of living that we've had. Ronald Reagan doesn't buy that, and he comes on and says, this is the greatest country in the world. We have the talent, we have the drive, we have the imagination. Now all we need is the leadership.
My kind of first impression, cliched image of how Reagan would look in a spot if he produced it himself, and this is my stereotype, would be him sitting at his desk.
Or an armchair.
With his arms folded on the table. Mm-hmm. I mean, his hands folded on the table. A flag in back of him.
Right.
And three walls of books.
Mm-hmm.
And this kind of squareness of his face being emphasized by the way it was shot.
Yeah, that broke the stereotype. But you know who did commercials like that? He started off like that. Kennedy.
Yeah.
I was shocked. Those were his original commercials.
Do you think that something like that helps make someone like Kennedy look more conservative and therefore appeal to an audience that he might not already have?
And the secret is every person, product, and everything's different. Everybody's different, and you have to take what they're best at. Now, the problem, as I said with Kennedy, is that when he was on camera, he looked stiff and scared. And he was so defensive, and when he was like, went in beaten, and that showed. I said, gee, that doesn't look like Kennedy with confidence and leadership abilities and concern about people and the health program. He looks frightened. He doesn't look like a bright guy.
How would you get around that?
Well, I've met Kennedy numerous times. I don't really know him, but any time I've seen him in a small group of people, he seemed like one of the guys, a regular down-earth guy, and interesting to talk to. And I would take that aspect of him, like loosen him up and have him talk like he was just talking to a small group of people who he felt comfortable with.
Mm-hmm. Let's go back to Reagan.
Yeah.
You did some television ads for him.
Right.
Did you do other work for him or other consultation?
Well, no, I did the radio and television, but the interesting part was that some of the lines from the television commercials have been picked up in speeches, which is what makes a total campaign when the two tie together.
Did you tell him what his stand was on issues, or did he tell you?
No, I might have chiseled it down a little. I might have taken a few paragraphs and boiled it down to a few lines that gave the same meaning, the feel.
Mm-hmm. How responsible do you feel for a candidate's success when you're doing their ads?
As responsible as the involvement. There's on a presidential campaign, the involvement is not that great. I consider it a small involvement, just radio and TV, only something millions of people have seen. I think the television commercials were a factor. He certainly went up in the polls in New York Times. The poll that the New York Times published in New Hampshire showed an upswing about the time our commercial started to be felt. But if he had stayed home in the ranch in California, if he didn't campaign, if he didn't have an organization, he wouldn't have won. So television is radio is a factor. When you do all possible, and do everything involved in a campaign, which are the campaigns that I've done, and then you feel a degree of success. And if you don't win, you feel to a degree of fault. Of course, the theory is when you win, that's why you won. When you lost, that's why you lost.
Right. McLuhan had a theory which you might think is a lot of baloney. I'm sure a lot of people do think it's a lot of baloney, which is that some characters are hotter and work better on a hot medium, which is, I forget whether the hot medium is radio or television, and some candidates are cooler and therefore should be on, I forget which it is, radio or television, and that if there was, for instance, if there was television at the time of Hitler, he never would have come into power because he worked better on radio than in a visual medium. Do you think that there's any truth in that kind of approach to certain people coming across better in one or the other?
The theory is there's no theory. Anything can work. Anything can fail. You don't know. It's what is good for one person might not be good for another. But television has been, I guess, the rule of thumb is television has been a pretty good, pretty big motivating factor. Now, there's another thing. You go out and you campaign. If a candidate is just on television, that's all the public knows about them. But if they're campaigning, that's another aspect of them. Now, if I did a campaign recently where the candidate didn't campaign, he wasn't on television. He didn't get any TV coverage. The only impression they had was of the commercials. Then when he got some negative press, they said, well, wait a minute. If he did get coverage and wasn't favorable, they said, wait a minute. One of them is lying. Is it the commercials or is it the press? He's telling me, you know, in one way he's one way he comes across as a sort of negative feelings. The other is positive. So how can it be? So you don't trust the person. And this can happen. So you could say somebody should only be on radio. Okay, radio is a fantastic medium. You know, it's a more visual medium than television. But if you're not on, if you're on radio and getting press, well, you're on radio and TV. If you're in the papers, so there's no one factor, but everything sort of works together. And what television commercials do in a campaign, I think what they did for Ronald Reagan, is they focused them. They say he stood for something. He stood for it. He talked about economy, foreign affairs, his background. When Bush went on, who was a favored winner, he didn't have anything. He didn't stand for anything. He looked pretty. He had great commercials. He had a commercial that named production television executive, producer, filmmaker, director, choreographer, editor, videotape operator, cameraman would be proud to have. They were beautiful. They were magnificent. The flags rolled down. Your heart throbbed. But he didn't say anything other than he looked good and he enjoyed being on television. Reagan came on straight and said something. Okay, here's where it's at. This is what we're going to do. Don't worry, I've done it before.
What would you say about the image Carter has presented? Are there suggestions you'd make to him if he called you up?
See, that's a difficult one. Difficult having, you know, being involved with Reagan. And difficult for the fact of a president. I don't know what to tell him. I mean, that's a difficult problem. That's where the real genius of being a media consultant plays, to be able to do something with Carter.
Well, now, it seems to me his image has gone through a number of renovations. During the first campaign, there was a lot of peanut imagery, and Jimmy Carter wears overalls and is down on the farm a lot of the time.
Well, that was shrewd on their part. It was not so much the peanut as, you think we'd say Jimmy Carter, you say peanut farmer, but you don't say part of Washington, part of the mess, part of what we've gone through for the past 8 years. So it was, they were successful in creating that image as an outsider.
Do you think that his lack of advertising presence has been good for him? Because I don't think there's been...
Well, he's advertised. He's advertised. No, the reason you haven't seen it is because he didn't do anything positive. It's all negative.
What kind of stuff?
Well, he had basically three kinds of commercials. He had his positive commercials where he had his daughter Amy. You know, kids and dogs are a rough act to follow. You know, show a present of his wife and daughter, helping her with the homework, and he said, he's got to be a nice man. The underlying fact was, look at me, I'm a good guy. Look at the other guy, you know, you wouldn't see him with his wife and daughter. That was the thing. Well, who are you going to vote for, a guy who teaches his daughter or a guy who runs from his family? That was the underlying characteristic. That was his positive. Father, a president, and a husband. He's done all these three with admiration. That was his theme. Then he went into another phase called President Carter Peacemaker, where he showed he and Sadat and Begin. Then his third phase, which he went to town with, was he had people that he taped all over the state saying, well, I wouldn't vote for Kennedy. He's too liberal. He doesn't have any character. Just nothing would slam. In the final picture, they show Carter, and underneath we're talking about, well, I wouldn't vote for Kennedy. I don't trust him.
You think negative ads work?
They worked against Carter's. The theory is no. The theory can also be yes. They worked for Carter. Kennedy resorted to negative commercials.
What were some of his?
Well, he had Carol O'Connor. And he came on as, look, God, this isn't a commercial. You know, I'm Archie Bunker out of character. It's not a commercial. No, he didn't say that, but that's the image. He's wearing a windbreaker jacket and standing in front of some hedges at his house. Friends, President Carter could be the worst president we've had since Herbert Hoover. Hiding the White House, we could have the biggest depression that we've ever had. A vote for my friend Ted Kennedy. He's concerned about people. And then they had one with Carter standing at a baseball diamond. They're playing softball and they're pitching him. He's letting pitches go by. Pitches are going by over his head. And they're talking about, do you want more of the same? He said, cross your fingers. And it was a confusing thing, but then they showed Kennedy more of a positive light and was a, you don't want any more of Carter.
Do you think these were effective?
I don't know. I think the problem with Kennedy's commercials were that you look at them, they didn't give you any reason to vote for Kennedy. The only positive thing that came out, you know, if what you remember is really good, because if you don't remember anything, that's what they told you. If you remember something, then you know they got a point across. All he said was, my 17 years in the Senate. But he never really told what he stood for. He never said, vote for me because I will. You know what the other guy's like. Well, I will. I've already shown that I can do this. One of the things I did for Reagan was did a couple commercials in background. One of the commercials, we started running the commercials right through. They started in New Hampshire and then went in the key states. And Pennsylvania wasn't a key state because it was strictly a beauty contest, so they didn't devote any time to it. It was one of the commercials said, only one man running for president has made government better. And so when Ronald Reagan came president, he did this, he did that, and the state wound up with a surplus. Then he came on and explained, you know, I found in California it's this, and the answer was, it's time we had a president who understood this. And you look and you say, yeah, you're right. Even if you don't agree with Reagan, he's right.
Huh. There's certain themes that every candidate, I think, tries to, you know, get across.
Right.
He likes people. He's a good guy.
He does
guy.
Like people. I didn't realize that until that.
No, I'm talking about Reagan. I mean, every candidate tries to do this, no matter what they're running
for. Oh, they want
to
show.
They like people.
There's an obligatory list. Bring out the children. Bring out the
leadership qualities.
Senior citizens. Yeah.
There's hard economic times,
right.
And I'll fix it.
Right.
And there's a lot of crime and injustice,
yeah.
And I'll fix that too.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we've all gotten the expectation of seeing these things when the ads come on. And do you think anyone's ever convinced by even a very good ad that this person is going to fix up the hard times or is, in fact, going to be a good leader or does care about people or does even love their wife?
Yeah, I think they do, believe it or not. And I think it gives them more of a positive impression. They feel like they've known them. If somebody is on television, if we took any one of the listeners and said, let's make this person famous, have them say something, do some interesting commercials about them. People come up, I saw you on television, I did this, and if this person wants to do something for you, they say, okay, yeah, you're the one. They go for the person they remember. They go, it's television advertising is unopposed, it's devastating. Two candidates go on, one goes on television, the other isn't on. That guy has got a clear shot. Now, there's other political ramifications in him, but to put it simplistically, that guy has a clear shot. They might not think he's the best, but when they get in the polls, they know him.
Now, what about a radio ad where you don't even get to see the person, so there isn't that sense of recognition? There's some radio ads where the whole purpose of the ad is to get you to remember the name. And the ad that I think of in this genre is the one that was that I heard a lot during the primaries, which was, it must be Mustakov.
Yeah.
The whole point of the ad, as a matter of fact, it was one of these little mini dramas, and there were two people trying to figure out what the advertising campaign should be, and one said, how about it must be Mustakov? And then the ad would end, yes, it must be Mustakov. And all you came away was that this guy needed an ad campaign and that it was a good mnemonic device to put must and Mustakov together, and I knew nothing about him, but I was going to remember his name. Is that more effective in helping me vote for him?
Well, it was
it
a cute.
It didn't work.
No, it's a cute commercial, but it's if you don't give somebody something to remember or some concrete reason, they probably won't. So they'll know the name, but it doesn't give enough of a reason. He was in a race where his opponents really didn't advertise as much as he did. He got on early, which was a help, and he did a lot more because I heard the commercial a few times. But it's okay. I know the name now. Well, why should I vote for him? Why should I do something? Why should I do it? Now, I did a congressional campaign 2 years ago in that district, and it was for Charlie Doherty. He's the congressman there now. And the basis of the campaign was that he was a state senator, and the basis of the campaign is no one fought harder for the people of Northeast Philadelphia than State Senator Charlie Doherty. No one's done more. No one cares as much. He's done this, and I would illustrate and had people come on. And by the time he walked away, he said, yeah, well, he introduced this bill. He fought for this. He opened the school. He got this. He's concerned about this. So he was in a Democratic area. He was a viable alternative. He said, well, we can feel comfortable voting for him. We know enough about him.
What are some of the favorite slogans you've come up with for political candidates who you've worked with?
Well, the one that I hear about all the time is when Arlen Specter and Tom Gullah ran for district attorney 11 years ago, and he used the slogan, they're tougher, they're younger, and nobody owns them. And they looked at Jim Tate, who was a mayor then, and they looked at his handpicked candidate for DA and city controller, and they said, yeah, they're all one of a kind, and Specter and Gullah are young and fresh, and we'll vote for him.
You did something for Kosmeyer.
Peter Kosmeyer, yeah.
You said Kosmeyer for Congress?
Well, Peter Kosmeyer was... I used a slogan for them, it was different. You know, I like to try things different. I wasn't sure what to do, and I saw a headline in the bulletin, and it said, Kosmeyer scores victory on Tox Island Dam. Well, you know, the fight for the Tox Island Dam, they wanted to keep it from happening, and Kosmeyer finally kept it from happening. And I said, that's it. That's a campaign. I used the basis of that, saying, with the basis of the campaign, they say freshman congressmen can't get anything done, but Peter Kosmeyer is the exception. He kept the Delaware scenic. And I use as a slogan for that, more to come. It's the same slogan Johnny Carson uses, more to come. And we talk about, this Peter Kosmeyer, there's more to come. This is only the beginning. And anything print I did, Kosmeyer, more to come.
That's nice.
Yeah. That was
Did you feel that was
refreshing.
Effective?
Yeah, I think so.
Mm-hmm.
If I didn't do it, he'd still be congressman and just wouldn't have had the vote edge. Maybe not as much fun.
When you're giving someone advice as to where to put their money for their ads, maybe we could look again at Reagan for this.
Sure.
What did you tell them about radio and television and print?
Well, the budgets were pretty well decided. The primary thing went in with was television, and I used it came off so well. He came off that and decided to use some of the TV to convert it into radio. And the radio is backup. Radio is a good backup. You can get in and get factual. I'd like to go off a second on this about one of the greatest uses of radio that I've seen in recent years that I've been involved in was 2 years ago. I did Pete Flaherty's campaign for governor of the primary campaign. Nobody knew, well, people knew the name Flaherty, but they didn't know much about him. And I had a woman come on with some lullaby kind of music saying, once upon a time, there was a man who... This lived in a city where everything was going bad. I'm paraphrasing. Everything was going bad, and he decided against all odds he would run for mayor, and he won. And when he got elected, and he turned everything around, and everybody loved it, and happily ever after, and so forth. And an announcer came on, sound like a fairy tale. It's not. The city is Pittsburgh. The man is Pete Flaherty. He did this. He did that. And did that. And the end, Flaherty comes on and says, "I'm the only candidate for governor who has balanced the budget, lowered taxes, and fired hacks." And the final closing line is, no wonder the politicians don't like him. And I could see an increased awareness. I could see just with that radio commercial, we could see it in polling, how he was just picking up. in areas where people really never heard of him were in campaign.
I remember that, Ed. So that's an example of how radio can be
That's
used.
Radio. How that's an example of radio.
You were pointing out to me when I asked you about print a little earlier that you don't see much print advertising for politicians. Why is that?
Well, because people, if you're on television, people feel like they know you. See, radio is like subliminal. They know about you. When they see you on television, they know you. And the cost of print is really, really expensive. For the cost of a full-page ad in a daily newspaper in Philadelphia that can only reach the maximum 500,000 people, plus pass along, you can be on television. You can get any. You can say, be reached by millions of people on television. That's dollar-for-dollar television and radio are your cheapest mediums. Newspaper is very expensive. But newspaper is good if you have a key group of people and you want to point out things in depth to, a block of vote.
I wonder where you think people pay more attention to the ads. Because on TV, you can run to the refrigerator and get some stuff, but you don't necessarily do that.
No.
I just sit there and keep watching
a
lot of times.
Yeah, sit there and watch it.
But I don't think I read the ads very closely in a newspaper.
No.
I have enough trouble getting to read the news.
No. Now, there's a way of doing a print ad and highlight things, so you really don't have to read it. You can get the gist of it.
You just get a gist of it, just skimming it quickly.
Yeah. Now, there are areas. Now, it depends on the area. It depends on the small election. It might not be radio available. Television would be out of the question, and print is a vital part. And also print, if it sums up a campaign. I think it gives a sum up, so it's a final reminder. The final reminder, and you don't see print till the end generally.
Mm-hmm. Do you feel that you're influenced by candidates' ads? Since you're really savvy about all of this and you make a lot of them yourself.
I don't get to see that many. Most of the influence I have is negative. Sometimes I'll see elections in New Jersey, I'll look at a candidate and say, I'd vote for that guy based on what I saw. I looked to see him on television, see his opponent. Again, between the two, I'd rather have one over the other. Yeah. I saw that with Brendan Byrne. I didn't particularly care for him as governor. And after the end of his last campaign, I would have voted for him if I lived in Jersey.
I know that many candidates try to use the news as a publicity vehicle. Well, everybody tries to do that. You stage a press conference or you create an event or do something that's newsworthy so you can invite out the cameras and be fairly sure that they're going to come and you're going to end up on the news, and that's free.
Right.
It might take money to organize it, but the coverage is free. You don't have to buy it minute per minute.
Well, you can't get it. You can't get on the news. You can't advertise on the news. And look at the people who watch the news. They're more interested. They don't have to watch the news. They can watch Carol Burnett. So on the same time, Benny Hill. They watch the news, so they're more concerned. So if you could advertise on it, you'd be getting the cream of the crop.
Is a media consultant like yourself ever called in to consult on a media event which is designed
to
land on the news?
Oh, sure. I've done that.
What are some situations where you've done that?
Pete Flaherty's primary, we had a $7.43 dinner in Horton Harrods, and we billed it as the political dinner you can afford. There were more press there covering it than there were people.
So that's a way to get on.
Oh, yeah. And they said, well, it's a media event. It worked. They do that. Well, there's an obligatory media event you do if you're running for a state or local, state or national office, and that's the Italian market. You're not allowed to campaign in Philadelphia. It's like two rules in Philadelphia. A building can't be higher than William Penn. And you can't run a campaign without going down the Italian market and shaking hands.
That's right. How effective is that anymore? I get the feeling that there's maybe a little less baby kissing than there used to be.
Oh, no, it's still there.
It's still there?
Yeah, it's still there. I went down on the bus tour with Reagan. I went down with the press, the two buses. I went on both of them, one going and one coming. And getting back on one of them, they heard the reporter saying, oh, I love media events. They know they're going out there. There's going to be 25. Wow. And the cameras are going to cover it because if they don't, somebody else will cover it. And they do it, and they know that the candidate's only going out there so the guy's going to have something to write about and something to show on television. And they say, Ronald Reagan was campaigning the Italian market today, and he seemed to have a warm reception. So I guess he's out working hard. I guess people like them. And then Carter will do it. Rosalind Carter will do it. Ted Kennedy will do it. Bush will do it. They'll all do it. Everybody does it.
When I was referring to less baby kissing happening now, you know what I'm thinking? That a new forum for a candidate, and one that's almost the equivalent of hanging around a shopping mall, is radio phone-in shows, which, well, Carter started doing as a president.
Right.
But I think candidates around the country have been getting on phone and shows with large audiences,
right,
and having people talk directly to them. Mm-hmm. And, of course, you don't have that personal contact, but, of course, you don't have to be surrounded by as many bodyguards probably when you're doing that either.
Well, it's also the feeling that he cares enough to be here. If you're not there, then you don't care. I mean, one of the reasons that Bush did well in Pennsylvania, aside from advertising, was that he campaigned a lot, and people said, well, he must care about the state. He's here. He must care. Yeah, but they saw him. They see him so much. Ted Kennedy, that's one of the reasons he won. Now, both of them ran negative commercials, almost canceled each other out, but Kennedy was here enough that he could have, I think he was qualified to vote here. He spent so much time in Pennsylvania. So they say, well, you know, he earns it. He earned it. And they look at it. They look at it that way, too. People like to see a ritual. They like to see a candidate work hard. And feel if he worked hard, well, six and one half dozen the other, give it to him.
If I walk into a voting booth, and as I look at the names, I hear in my head some of the commercials and slogans that have been devised for them. Are the advertisers successful, or are they only successful if I pull the lever?
Just getting there, for the fact that you might have if you have a favorable impression, it's the same as being a supermarket, and you see something, and all of a sudden something comes to your mind. Yeah, that would be it. It's doing advertising for a high level, governor, senator, mayor, president, it's not as, the influence isn't there like doing a lesser office. People are more interested in executive and senatorial positions.
Elliot, let me reintroduce you for our listeners who are just joining us now. I'm speaking with Elliot Kirsten, who is known throughout the Delaware Valley for his very innovative advertising mind. And he spent some time, I guess it was late last year or earlier this year, I'm kind of getting my, at the turn of the year, you get your years mixed up, working as a media advisor for Ronald Reagan. Now, I'd like to just change subjects a little bit and talk a little bit about some of your other advertising work, because Elliot does a lot of work for clients around the Delaware Valley, ranging from airlines to haircutters. Do you believe in clever ads? I know that there's different, I guess you might say that there's no theory that applies, but some advertisers believe that only the ad that makes a point, that creates a need and tells you how to fill that need, is going to be a successful ad. And an ad that's just clever, that might be a lot of fun, isn't going to, it might amuse you, but it isn't going to get you to go out and purchase that product.
That's a good question, because people say, well, it's just because it's clever. Something can be clever and do all those things about filling a need and making you go out to buy something or finding out the need. There are ads that just try and get attention for the sake of getting attention, and that might be clever, but it really doesn't say anything. It's like a political campaign if it doesn't say anything. Now, you can do something that's both. You can create a need, but I think most time what advertising does is it fills a void that's already there, or it might get you to change your mind, or might turn you on to something you might not have thought about.
Mm-hmm. What are some of the ads that you've done that you feel have worked, that they've been clever and they've helped you fill a need? They've made a suggestion that you're going to follow up on.
Okay. Just recently, I did an ad for Barry Leonard, Crimper. And Barry has these zany ads, once you use the Fidel Castro lookalike holding a chicken, and Barry's looking at him pondering. He says, Barry, you can even make a chicken look good. And I had a before and after with Albert Einstein that said, showed Albert Einstein as before and after, showed Albert Einstein with a suit on and looking very suave and not scared. And those things, he said, well, that brought his name up. And said, the guy must be good if he can do something like that. I believe the kind of advertising where you did the thinking. And he said, well, you know, anybody would be like that, can't be that bad. Then I went in the other direction with him, and I think filling a need. I ran a picture of Barry, and it felt like Telly Savalas. I didn't say it was Telly Savalas. I didn't say it wasn't Telly Savalas. And the headline says, a lot of guys aren't as lucky as us, Barry. And says, you know, and it's Barry, and sort of like he wrote it, and it says, you know, I feel you're lucky if you have a full head of hair or no hair, because in between you don't know what to do with it. And it went on to tell men who didn't have that much hair what to do, how to handle it. So what do you believe in? I believe if you have a bald spot and you sweep your hair over, you're calling attention to it. Besides, you're afraid if somebody sneezes, the hair will get out of place. And what I do is I cut it a little shorter. I cut it this. I did that.
Oh, I can see how that really does work.
And then people came in and said, well, I'm here because the ad. A lot of women came in. I saw a woman there last week and I got a haircut, and she said, well, it seemed to me the ad was directed towards men. I said, it was. I thought it was a great compliment that she had a feeling it was directed towards men when the headline says a lot of guys aren't as lucky as us. I mean, you know, it's so, you know, it created a need. She said, you know, I'm always worried about having thin hair. I wonder if she's listening. I said, a lot of guys, you know, I have always had thin hair. I didn't know what to do. And I finally decided, I saw that, I thought I would come in here and let you worry about it. And that's the impression he gives. And he says, it's not in your head. It's not in your head that, it's not on your head that counts. It's what's in your head. I believe that you should walk into a room. Your shoulders should be erect. You should have a smile on your face. And you should be thinking about, wait a minute, I'm not a psychiatrist. Although it would be nice to charge for a haircut what a psychiatrist charges for a visit. Oh, well, maybe someday.
What's another example of a campaign that you really enjoyed?
Another example? Another thing I like is there's a lot of these things to do. You do big things and do small things. And some of these small things keep your sanity. There's a store on Chestnut Street, a children's store. It's called Carl's. And the owner of the store is a fellow by the name of Alan. I call him Uncle Alan. And I just have a lot of fun. And I said to him at the beginning, I said, Alan, I'm going to make you look like an idiot. And I've kept my word. He does. He does look like an idiot in his ass, but a lovable one. And people like it. And they feel very comfortable. They feel very comfortable in going there. Recent ad, it's in the current issue of Philadelphia, says, buy original art, says Uncle Alan. That's my advice. There's one Uncle Alan wants an original work of art. He doesn't go around. Shop for it, he says to his artist, Uncle Trib. I like original art. So what if he wants a donkey or a clown? Well, Uncle Trib will make up a donkey on a clown on a donkey for him. And if he wants it made in a lamp, he'll make it into a lamp. And he said, Uncle Alan, this good art, original art doesn't come cheap. The prices start at $10. And it's like that tongue-in-cheek thing, the tongue-in-cheek attitude throughout. Having a driver, my picture should be in Carl's hands, not Uncle Alan's. Can Uncle Alan install a crib? Can he carry a crib to a house? Can he install it? Can he make sure it won't fall apart? Of course not. Now, I've been doing this for 20 years, 22 years. My picture should be in it. You see Uncle Alan. Tell him Uncle Charlie's picture ought to be in there. And people love it.
What do you want to find out about a product or a client before you figure out your campaign?
You try and see how they fit in, what the angle is. There's an angle somewhere along everything. There's something could be buried. You want to find what's the edge? What would separate it from the pack? I like advertising that separates everything from the pack. I think an example of that, of what I've seen, is Pioneer stereos on television. Now, stereos are stereos. We all know that. But the Pioneer, the way they do it, the commercials on Saturday Night Live, are just works of art where they say to capture creative genius, you need to be creative genius. We bring it back alive. It makes you think they've got to be the best. If I just walked in the store and saw a lot of stereos, I saw a Pioneer, I would think they are the best. It would just capture my imagination.
You know, I sometimes wonder about the people who advertise on Saturday Night Live, because it's probably a great place to advertise because of high visibility.
Right.
But since Saturday Night Live is always spoofing commercials, sometimes you don't know which the real commercial is. And when a pretty tacky commercial comes on, you think that it might be
right.
Saturday Night Live producing it, and chances are you're not going to buy that product.
Right. Well, you might, but you'll pay attention to it. You know, Budweiser did a series of commercials just for Saturday Night Live.
I figured that because I don't think it's very funny, but it looked like it was trying to really fit in. It's worth all the people being taste buds in the large mouth.
Why do you think they call them buds? No, they're not really funny, but it's bizarre. It's different.
Yeah, there was something else about Saturday Night Live. I'll think of it later. Do you like to be known for the ads that you do? I mean, do you? Do you like to have your signature on it somewhere?
Yeah, I think they do. I think they all reflect my thinking. I enjoy doing it, and I enjoy having people pay me to do what I enjoy best, and my signature's on it.
Do you stay around and watch commercials? Some people like the commercials more than the programs on TV, I think.
Oh, yeah. I like good commercials. I hate most commercials. Every now and then I'll see a good commercial.
What trends?
Rarely.
What trends do you see now?
I like commercials for Citibank. And I thought that was good because I thought the American Express commercials were genius. With great negative commercials. I mean, the fear, we lost our traveler's checks. Well, just go to the American Express office. But they weren't American Express. I don't know what to tell you. I mean, it makes you panic. The don't leave home without it. And it was, they were so strong, they eventually had to water them down because they were misrepresentative. They gave the impression that only American Express can redeem your money. Citicorp came along. It was the first national city bank that changed the name to Citicorp checks. With a clever set of commercials of a husband and wife in a Japanese bath. She says, "Oh, I forgot my traveler's checks. I left them somewhere." And another fellow comes over in the pool in the bathtub and he said, "I overheard you. There's a Citicorp office. Don't worry." And he starts to introduce himself. And the woman says, "Oh, don't stand up. Don't stand up. That's okay." I thought it was good. I thought there was some very interesting series of commercials. And I thought, how can anybody outdo American Express? Well, here they did it. They did it.
Do you see any general trends in what many advertisers are aiming for?
I don't think there is a general trend. I think as soon as something happens, it changes. What has been good in the past will be good tomorrow. What is good tomorrow won't be good the day after tomorrow. There is no general trend. There was a lot of parodies before.
One thing I hear a lot on the radio are these little mini-dramas.
Yeah.
Where I guess it's kind of the Stiller and Mira approach,
yeah.
Where it's two people who are acting the part of, say, two people out on a date or two people buying
right.
a car.
Right.
And there's a little plot to the commercial
yeah.
and usually an attempt at a very cute, clever ending.
Right.
I feel myself that I've really had it with that style of commercials because once you've heard it twice, you can't bear to hear the whole thing again. It's like seeing a bad movie
That's
over
right.
for the fifth time.
That's right.
What do you think of those?
When they're good, they're very good. When they're bad, they're hard. And even the people who do the best can sometimes slip in. There's been a trend. The reason why you hear a lot of that is because there's a couple of fellows out in Chicago who made up a series of commercials for Time magazine. And they're very clever commercials of a husband and wife talking. He said, "That man over there, I know I've read about him in Time magazine. Oh, I saw him in the personality section. No, I think he was in the news section. No, he's in the entertainment section. I'm going over and ask him. I want to get his autograph. Excuse me, sir, can I have your autograph?" So who are you? I'm the plumber. I was in your house last week. Oh, Time magazine. And the success of that created a lot of everybody. Well, let's do the 1-2 back and forth. Let's do that. So in addition to Steel and Mira, but that was the latest surge in it.
Yeah.
The copy's good. If a copy's good, it generally holds up a longer period of time. When it's not good, it's boring.
You never use jingles, do you?
No, I don't believe in jingles.
How come?
Incidentally, that's what Bush and Baker did when they started, when they were campaigning against Reagan. They went in with jingles, and I figured, at a time like this, and the country's in this economic state, to go with jingles, "Welcome back, America, you've been away too long." I mean, how can you solve problems with a jingle?
Well, I used to live in Buffalo, and there was a jingle. I'd sing it to you. I'd be too embarrassed. But, I mean, I still remember this jingle. I thought it was terribly obnoxious. It was in the period when all political candidates were trying to do commercials that looked like the openings for detective television
mm-hmm.
series.
Right.
I won't sing it for you. But you don't think jingles work for products either?
I'm not a believer in them. I know there's this expression, if you throw enough dirt against the wall, some of it will stick. And that's what the thing with jingle. It's an easy way out. Now, but there are exceptions. I think McDonald's has done an excellent job with the jingles. But most music is so bad. Most jingles are so bad.
Have you ever done an advertising campaign for yourself?
Yeah, I've made up commercials for myself.
Can you tell us one?
Well, I did one commercial. Some of them I make up, and I enjoy playing them in the office. I'm playing for people. I never even put it on the air. One commercial I did, it said, "Ladies and gentlemen, Elliot Kersen, founder and president of Elliot Kersen Advertising, will explain how he comes up with one great idea after another that had a voice on, not mine." He sound like a hillbilly. "Well, I don't know how I do it. It just happens, disappears. It's like you're in the soup bowl of earth. An idea just pops, service pop. There it goes one. There it goes by. See it goes by. See it go by. But there's an idea. I don't know how to do it. I've been to psychologists and soothsayers, and they can't explain it. It just happens." And that was Elliot Kersen. Some people work better when the moon's full, but that's not true. Yeah.
That's funny. Elliot, I want to thank you a lot for being here.
Oh, it was fun.
That was fun.
Yeah.
I've been talking to Elliot Kersen, and as he just mentioned, he's a Philadelphia-based advertiser, and he's done a lot of campaigns for restaurants and airlines and Frankfurters and many places around the Philadelphia area. He's also done a lot of campaigns for political candidates. Most recently, he did some work for Ronald Reagan. Elliot, thanks so much for being here. This is Fresh Air, and you're tuned to WUHY-FM in Philadelphia.